Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Ryan Tannehill, quarterback for the Miami Dolphins, and I represent the Fence-Sider with the PH.
Good evening. Welcome to another edition of Fence-Sider Radio. My name is Keith. I'll be your host. We're on the air until about 10:30 Eastern tonight. We have a very special show, which is why we're on Wednesday this week. Tomorrow is, of course, the 2015 NFL draft night, that is. It's been a wild week, a lot of rumors, of course. The big thing now, the coined phrase is smokescreen, and there's been plenty of that. Not so much for us, which is a change. I feel like in years past, the Dolphins get put up as a team that's a buyer, a wheeler, and a dealer. So I haven't really seen that much about the team this week. But, of course, we have 24 hours for all that to drastically change. As always, I am flanked by my faithful co-host, Duke. How are you tonight?
I'm doing well. Merry NFL Christmas Eve, everyone.
It is. It is the NFL Draft Eve. I find that this is actually more exciting than Christmas Eve at this point. Certainly more rewarding, and you don't have to see any relatives that you're avoiding. We have a special, speaking of people we avoid, we have a very special guest on tonight. He actually joins us more often than not, but he's a special full-time guest tonight, Lewis from Fin Maniacs. How are you doing this evening?
Doing pretty good. Had a rather interesting exchange on Twitter, but I think we're past that.
Give us a second and do tell. One thing I do want to note, I'd like to start the show on a high note, an obvious note, if you will. The news just came in that the Dolphins will pick up the fifth-year option on Ryan Tannehill's contract. So somewhere Omar is bristling. Although, I mean, we all expected this.
I'm perfectly fine with it.
As you should be. Before we really get things started, tell us about your little Twitter encounter.
Yeah, as if you guys don't know. Well, if it comes
know.
To pass.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure you don't.
What's that supposed to mean?
Okay, so I had too much faith in humanity, and I said that because if he shows up, we're going to have another guest later, and that'll be Matthew Cannata, who is actually the head guy for Fin Maniacs. And he and I are kind of the two guys, and Chad is also on our show. But Matt was gonna be on this show as well, and I said, hey, you want to – we're going to – because when I hear the word double team, I don't think – nasty part. I think like, hey, we're gonna go and team up, and we're gonna take these two on and stuff. It sounds
you are
so
quite literally
more...
the only guy listening to this show who feels that way. Quite literally,
yeah, okay, well,
everyone else listening to this show thinks double team. What are you thinking?
That's an alpha-ism, isn't it?
Oh, that's probably why we're conditioned to think that way. That's a good point.
That
we
could
spend
be
as much
it.
Time around alpha as we do. We've been conditioned to interpret things like, oh, you want to double team these guys? Come on. Anyway, I didn't realize that was the encounter you were talking about. I do know about that encounter, and it was an unpleasant one, to say the least. Hopefully Matthew calls in at some point. I'd like to – I was thinking that maybe we could go ahead and do a little 14-tick mock draft. We can each we'll each pick a number, and we'll go from there. I think that'd be exciting. I think we have from what I could tell on Twitter, we should have a decent amount of guest callers tonight. I know Brian, who contributes on the site, is going to give us a call at some point. I always like hearing from him. Dolphin fan for life, provided he's not back in the hospital. I assume he's on the mend, and I assume he'll give us a call. And then we have some other regulars that we always like to hear from. So if you guys want to give us a call in the studio, it's an important night. 347-326-9461. We are talking tomorrow night's NFL draft. We're talking about whether or not the Dolphins are going to do what everyone all of a sudden expects them to do, which is draft Georgia running back Todd Gurley. Boy, that whole hype train escalated in our hurry, did it not? Because it was sort of bubbling at the surface for a while. Then it, I would say, within the past week and a half, it skyrocketed. I mean, that became like the de facto pick among a lot of mock drafts, a lot of people who they think they know what the Dolphins are going to do at number 14. What do you guys think about that?
You want to go first, Duke?
Sure. I mean, I personally kind of believe that. I mean, it's all a lot of it smokescreen. I mean, I'm sure they have Gurley high on their board, and I don't know. It's a little too much to be one of those. Maybe they're throwing the curveball and telling the truth, and everyone thinks it's false. Kind of smokescreen. So I don't think that's part of what's going on. I won't be unhappy with that pick. I just don't think it's the best use of the resources, simply because even if you change the offense to a run-oriented offense, you know, look at what Seattle does. You're still only talking about a running back that gets 14 or 15 carries a game on average. Is that what you really want out of the pick at 14? Or could you find a back later that that could give you those 14 carries? So, you know, and it's not like Lamar Miller is chopped liver either. I mean, he got 216 carries, 11 right at 1,100 yards, 8 touchdowns. He was top 10 in every category except carries. So I just don't see running back as a huge need. But, I mean, if they feel that he's a special enough prospect, that he is an elite kind of guy, a once in a, you know, 10-year kind of running back or whatever, then I could see them doing it. But I think it's a lot, me personally, I think a lot of it's just smoke screen, either to get someone to trade up or perhaps scare a team ahead of Miami into kind of making a panic pick. You know, I've seen a lot of stuff saying that the Jets might be interested in Gurley. If they think that he could go in the division, you know, maybe they could scare their new GM into making that pick. I don't know.
What do you think, Lewis? Smokescreen? Legitimate? What's going on here?
Okay, well, the fact that there's so much smoke going around the NFL now, I honestly have no idea what's real and what's not. I'm kind of having, like, hallucinations about this kind of thing. But if you're going to ask me, like, what do I think of the Gurley pick if it happens, I would be okay with it. I don't have a problem with this. I mean, if this were a case where people are so casually just comparing this guy to Peterson and Lynch and this is the thing. Do you think that he can be Beast Mode 2.0? If you do believe so, and I think he can be as long as he's healthy, and of course there's always that risk, but a lot of great talents come with that risk. If you believe he can do that, then imagine what it would be like for Tannehill if he could have someone like Marshawn Lynch in the backfield. I understand Pablo and Oscar's case about Lamar Miller ran for 1,000 yards. I get it. I'm not looking to replace Lamar Miller. I am looking to add a piece to the offense that could pretty much be elite into the coming years. Because Lamar Miller's contract is almost up. We're going to have to either pay the guy or move on from him. So if you're going to move on from him, it'd be a good thing to have someone like Gurley who could potentially be the next elite running back in the NFL. And I get the whole Melvin Gordon thing. He probably fits better in this offense, and I understand thinking. But to me, Melvin Gordon just seems like a better, younger version of Lamar Miller, at least in my opinion. I don't see him as a bruiser kind of a back. I see him more as a Lamar Miller speed guy. Maybe he can be the home run guy, just like Miller could, assuming he gets a good hole to run through. But if my preference, I want somebody who can get the tough yards when it counts, and that's usually somebody like Todd Gurley, simply because he's a more powerful runner than someone like Melvin Gordon would be. I wouldn't be upset by the pick, but I'm not going to jump for joy either. It's kind of a weird, neutral stance on the whole thing.
I think that as far as I know, we're all Lamar Miller fans on this show. I know I am. I think.
Yeah, I don't
Duke
have a problem
too,
with Miller. No, not at all.
I think that's what some people are misconstruing with this whole conversation, though, is they think that if you're into drafting Todd Gurley at number 14 overall, that you either don't like Lamar Miller or you're willing to toss him aside for Todd Gurley. And I mean, nothing could be further from the truth for me, for not to speak for Duke, but I know he feels the same way. That if you're bringing up that conversation, that you're not talking about replacing Lamar Miller or minimizing what he does. I love Lamar Miller's effect on this offense. I'd like to think that he's got his best years ahead of him, hopefully. But another thing is, as the contract expires, and you wonder, is he going to be back with Miami? Is he going to go elsewhere? Is because I mean, that second contract with a running back in today's NFL is a tricky thing. It's something that all teams approach differently, but you're starting to see a consensus come up where a lot of people get gun-shy when it comes to re-signing these running backs. And I would be open to re-signing Lamar Miller. I think that I like what he brings to the team. I like his speed. I think he's a perfect a runner in the zone blocking scheme. So, I mean, he's one of those one-cut type guys. And I mean, so he fits what we're looking to do. I'm going to go ahead and get the take from Brian, actually, gave us a call while we were in the middle of that. I had to step away for a second. And Brian, how are you doing tonight?
Good. What's up, guys?
Nothing. Just we're inside of 24 hours now, so everyone's excited. We can do compare it to Christmas Eve.
Yep.
Christmas Eve. So what do you hope we do with the number 14 pick within reason? I mean, do you think by some miracle of a chance one of the receivers is there for us? Do you think we move up? Do you think we surprise people at number 14? What do you see happening tomorrow night?
I mean, predictions are kind of tough at this stage with all the smoke blowing around.
Everyone knows it, though.
It's funny because every time you start getting excited about a player, you start reading more and more into it and start talking yourself out of it. So about a month ago, we were all excited because there were 20 guys at the spot that we're picking, and we had so many options and opportunities, and everything was looking up. And now as it gets closer and closer, I feel like a lot of us, including me, are just talking ourselves out of players where the draft's going to be tomorrow. There'll be two or three guys on the board, and you're like, I'm not sure if I want any of these guys.
Yeah, overanalyzation is a very real thing, especially in the last few days leading up to the draft. Like you said, it's really easy to talk yourself out of some of these players, and I totally agree. The one dynamic I've noticed with this year's draft class, the wide receivers in particular, is that it started out and Dolphins fans were fairly certain that they weren't going to get any of the big three at number 14. And then it looked like, hey, maybe you can pick between two of these guys at number 14. Maybe a couple of these guys will slide. And I feel like the pool's dried up again. Now people expect all three to be gone.
I mean, I find myself every year kind of usually an advocate of trading down, just because we're not that team that is just, one piece away from a huge contention where we need a couple building pieces and we need to hit on a few to make that big splash and a big jump from year to year. So I think trading down, if the value is right, is still good because, there's a lot of prospects within that 20 to 30 range that I think is right up our wheelhouse. And, either one of the top wide receivers will fall. Most of the linebackers, if not all the linebackers, will be available. Most of the running backs, if not all the running backs, will be available, probably besides Gurley. I wrote a fan post today. You probably checked out how I'm not really a big advocate of drafting Todd Gurley at pick 14, even though I'm a big fan of his, and I love the way he runs, and I think he'd be a great piece for Miami. There's a lot of reasons why, mostly because of the value of the running back position. It's changed. Gone are the years of Barry Sanders, and football has definitely become a different sport from a one running back standpoint. So to answer your question, I'd say probably trade down. If Devontae Parker's on the board, I do like him. I like what he can bring to this team. I think he can be that jump ball kind of receiver, and it would give us three young pieces for Tannehill to kind of grow with. So we don't have to play musical chairs every year at the receiver position. I think that if we draft a guy like that, those guys are set. And if Jordan Cameron is the receiver that we all think he's going to be at tight end, I think we got a great building piece to build, you know, around our offense. So I would trade.
Receiver core.
Yeah, I would trade down or target Devontae Parker would probably be my option. If we trade up for anyone, it would be Kevin White, but I don't see that happening. And we'll see what happens. But there's plenty of options. There's not just one guy that seems to be a lock like a lot of other years.
I think Kevin White would definitely be the X factor. I can imagine the frenzy that a lot of fans would go into if the Dolphins moved up, which is funny because everyone's still sore over the whole Deion Jordan thing. And a lot of fans were excited when we traded up to 3 2 years ago. So it would be interesting. I agree that Devontae Parker is a guy the Dolphins shouldn't pass on. I've seen a couple of mock drafts where he's there at 14 and the Dolphins go elsewhere. I think that's insane. I think my favorite thing about him is the fact that if you put him in this offense, everyone else's job in the receiver core becomes exponentially easier.
Agreed.
Like, all of a sudden, Greg Jennings is in there, and he's able to serve that veteran presence. But the thing is his job is easier. He's in there, and all he needs to do is just be another contributing wide receiver in this group. Jarvis Landry takes a lot of pressure off of him if Devontae Parker's in there. Jarvis Landry can do what he does. Kenny Stills does the kind of work in space the Dolphins want and serves as a deep threat. He's got that 4.3 speed. All of a sudden, things become a lot easier because when you game plan for these guys, Kenny Stills and Jarvis Landry and Greg Jennings and Jordan Cameron are just pieces of the puzzle. And then you have to sit there and think, but what are we going to do about Devontae Parker? So that's exciting. And, of course, I'm building this up, and now Devontae Parker will be gone by, like, number 11 or 12. I saw the rumor come out today that people suspected. There was the rumor that Cleveland wanted to trade up to 2. You have to figure that might benefit us in terms of receiver, because if they moved up to 2, and I know that that was BS, but if they moved up to 2 for Mariota at that point, Tennessee's trying to rebuild the back end of their defense to go ahead and pair it with the work that they did to the front seven this offseason. You think that maybe, just maybe, they leave wide receiver alone. And then you're worrying about a team like Minnesota. What is Minnesota going to do? There's a couple of avenues they could take. You know, Mike Zimmer is a guy where he wants that really nasty defense. He wants that front seven that is just absolutely ruthless. So while they're starting to really build up an impressive front seven in Minnesota, maybe they take one of the guys who is expected to slide a bit and put him to their advantage and go ahead and just add him. Because I've seen this thing how Shane Ray is considered a late one. I do not see that happening now. I know a lot of people want to believe it. I don't think he's on the board past, I don't know. I have a hard time buying that he's gonna fall that far.
Maybe.
I think
one of those guys will fall, though. They always do. You know that.
I think that if it's one of them's going to fall, but you're seeing the thing that Gregory's going to fall, Ray's going to fall. A lot of people are – the issue that people have with Vic Beasley is that he was a one-year standout in terms of the numbers that people want to see at the next level. So, I mean, something's got to give here because you can't just have all these pass rushers falling. I mean, we as well as anyone know how hard it is to acquire a top-tier pass rusher. Now, you have this whole narrative out there, like it's going to be raining pass rushers. They're all going to be falling out of the top 15, top 20, possibly the top 32. And I think that it's too important of a need. It's a hot-button type position because everyone wants it. Right now, you're seeing like when these guys were all getting mocked into the top 12, it's because everyone wants these elephant type rushers now, or they want a Leo rusher. That's becoming the new thing. you know, Atlanta wants their Leo rusher. Jacksonville wants their Leo rusher. Seattle can always use another one. So, I one of them will fight. It could be Randy Gregory. I saw that a lot of people are questioning his mental, his ability to take the mental rigors of the game. I believe that was the direct quote. So, yeah, someone's going to fall out of it. But I don't think that it's going to be all these guys. I don't think – because that hurts us then, because you have to assume that if all these pass rushers are falling out, who's going in their place?
A lot of the receivers. Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So that whole theory that we push on the site about how you like it when these quarterbacks, as long as they have a quarterback, which we do now so we can enjoy the fruits of this, when you have these quarterbacks and these pass rushers and these guys come in and they uproot a lot of the talent that normally you wouldn't have a crack at getting, all of a sudden these guys might be in play. Now, at 14, it's going to be a bit of a stretch. But, I mean, that's what you hope for. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't see Shane Ray falling that far. I think someone's going to get all starry-eyed when they see him on the board. I mean, it could be as far as 20. I don't know. Perhaps the same thing with Randy Gregory. I think Vic Beasley isn't going to slide that far. I think Vic Beasley's outstanding. So, we're kids in a candy store with this. It's so funny to hear us talk. I mean, like, there's all these options. We're not even talking about what the Dolphins – we're talking about stuff that will affect the Dolphins. We're not even talking about stuff that they're going to do directly.
And everything we talk about is going to change within 10 minutes of the first round.
Oh, yeah. I've already changed my mind.
Yeah, it happens. It happens every year. You know, nothing you can do about it. You know, that's the best. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing too. Like, you know, the receiver position, obviously, is something we looked at. Devontae Parker's, you know, a great receiver in a deep wide receiver class. Like you mentioned, he kind of fits that one piece for a young receiver that kind of gives every Dolphin receiver their role. You know, he's our red zone jump ball guy. Kenny Stills would be more of our deep end open space guy. Greg Jennings would probably take over for Brian Hartline. You know, probably be a little bit better at that position. And Jarvis Landry just needs to pretty much do what he did last year and build upon that. But well, I mean, Miami doesn't have to go receiver at 14. That's another reason why I'm an advocate of trading down, because you got to think one of these guys will drop. And if his best player available and it happens to be a receiver, you know, Miami has need for a receiver to possibly, you know, end up as their Z or number one receiver in the future. So, you know, if these receivers start kind of going a little bit early, like you mentioned, I think Miami should be on the phone, kind of see what options they have out there, and think about trading back. And there's plenty of decent receivers that can come in and do a good job, but between receiver, linebacker, cornerback, and offensive line, you know, Miami has definitely a bunch of options. So we really don't know what the heck they're going to be thinking of and what they're going to be setting up for day two and day three of the draft.
Yeah, you have to figure out at some point they're going to try to recapture that third round pick that they gave away for Kenny Stills. One thing that I want to bring up before we move on to some other topics, although they're all draft related anyway, is you have a lot of people on the site who are a big fan of Nelson Aguilar. Duke and I are both big fans of him. I think he would be just an absolute incredible fit in Bill Lazor's offense, no doubt. I fear, though, that if they draft him, it's almost like the reaction from some people is going to be sort of anticlimactic, like, oh, we just got a you know, a fast-ish receiver. They don't understand that. No, what you just drafted is Ryan Tannehill's best friend moving forward, and that's to pair him with these other, or to add him to all these other incredible receivers that we're stocking the cupboard with right now. But Nelson Aguilar has the best hands in this draft. I think he's people are going to say Amari Cooper is the best route runner. I don't think he's a better route runner than Amari Cooper. I think he's near as good. So I'd say he's a top two route runner. He's got low 4.4 speed. So, I mean, he's not, which is outstanding. I mean, he's not an absolute speed demon. If you're expecting him to pick up Mike Wallace's slack, that's not going to be the case. But what you're getting is a guy who's just not only the ultimate safety valve, but he can stretch the field when you ask him. He can make the contested catch. He shows up when you need him. and he's reliable. And I think that's awesome. So I hope that if the Dolphins do end up with that guy, they realize that, no, you just didn't pick a – you didn't just grab a guy who's got a few nice attributes and he's a sort of middle-of-the-road receiver. I think you have a sleeper in this draft who could turn out to be one of the best guys to come from the 2015 receiver group, which is a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we all saw what Odell Beckham did last year. And, you know, Aguilar is one of those interesting guys. Everyone's got their favorite prospects and their sleepers and their guy to look out for. I mean, Aguilar, I watched a little bit of his tape. He's a shifty guy, man. He's definitely one of those guys you want over space and open space. He's not too big, so you have to just be wary about, you know, a lot of crossing routes and everything with all the big physical defenders in the NFL nowadays. But, you know, I can see this guy as, you know, his ceiling being a Randall Cobb type player, and think about, a quarterback-only receiver. I mean, that's just a weapon that we have. So, you know, everyone's got their guys. I mean, he kind of reminds me a little bit of, Philip Dorsett in this draft, just another guy that's got plenty of speed, but that's not his only attribute. But, you know, when I look at Miami, the reason I like a guy like Kevin White or even Devontae Parker, even though he's not as big, but I just think Miami needs a big target. We haven't really had our big wide receiver since Brandon Marshall, and he just frustrated fans because of his hands, and that's our main reason why Perriman's getting such a bad rap on this site, even though I don't think I think his drops are blown a little bit out of proportion. For every drop, he makes a spectacular catch, and he's a lot better off the line at creating separation than a lot of these other bigger guys are. I don't think people realize that. So
okay, well, let's be fair here. Let's be fair. Marshall had Chad Henne throwing him the football, and he was definitely not friends with Chad Henne, so that probably had a lot to do with it.
That's a good point, and I was always a pro advocate of Marshall, and I got blasted plenty of times. But as soon as we traded him, we fielded a rookie quarterback and Ryan Tannehill, and gave him who was that receiver? Who was Nene, right? Was his number one receiver on Tracy's?
Legitimate Nene, the training camp superstar.
Omar Kelly's favorite player. And then we realized why Ryan Tannehill wouldn't progress the way as fast as we wanted him to. So, you know, every young receiver on the team looks to have kind of their own niche. And I think we already have a good, solid nucleus of playmakers. And I'm just looking for that big guy who, you know, if Tannehill gets flustered or we need a big play that he can kind of throw to the sideline and one-on-one coverage, you're going to, give the benefit of the doubt to your receiver. And even though Parker is big as, a DGB or a Kevin White or even a Breshad Perriman, I like his all-around play. He kind of reminds me of A.J. Green, not as solid as a route runner. And I think Parker has the best hands in the draft. He's got phenomenal body control, great vision, great awareness, and awesome concentration. So that's kind of what I like, because he can be one of the possession guys, but also a big play receiver, and that balance is kind of what I look for, as a missing piece for a young receiver to kind of grow with Ryan Tannehill.
I'm not going to argue with that, but I think the whole idea of actually needing a big play receiver is a little overblown at this point. I was always saying that the only reason that we needed to keep Wallace was because he made sure that the safeties had to back off and had to keep some space between them and Wallace. But now that we have this kind of an offense and there's going to be targets flying all over the place, I don't see the need so much for a big play receiver, because now we're bringing in guys who can get the yards after the catch, and I think that we can create what is, in essence, a Tom Brady-esque offense. And I keep harping back to this because it's so relevant, but nobody wants to listen to it. In the Super Bowl, Brady threw 40 out of 51 passes, just less than 10 yards. That's how far they went going forward, less than 10 yards. He dinked and dunked his way to winning a Super Bowl. So the whole idea of we need this big play receiver, it's a little overblown if you ask me. I think Tannehill can pretty much dink and dunk his way to victory as long as his receivers can get the yards that they need afterwards.
I think the idea is that you just want to equip Ryan Tannehill with best weapons possible. So, I mean, I get the idea that if you're adding more size to a receiver's frame and you put them out there, you're technically enhanced, or you're enhancing your quarterback's chances of success. I want to go ahead and segue real quick because we have another caller. Brian, you want to stay with us? It's a special night. You want to stick around?
Yeah, no problem.
Okay. Yeah, usually I get skittish about having so many people on the show, but now what the hell. So next, we're going to the phones, and it's Zach, and talk about Lyle Collins and that whole debacle going on right now. Zach, how you doing tonight?
How's it going, guys?
Good.
Yeah, I mean, I just thought I'd bring up the Lyle Collins leaving the draft to deal with his ex-girlfriend was murdered or something awful.
His pregnant ex-girlfriend was murdered.
Yeah, even worse. But I know Keith and I had a quick chat about it on Twitter today, and I think it's getting way overblown. People are turning this into, you know, some sort of character issue that really isn't there. He's just trying to help them out.
Those are people who didn't actually read the article, and they're just thinking, oh, well, this is a problem. Time to go.
Yeah, that's unfortunate because everything I've seen from Collins suggests that this isn't the kind of thing you can expect from him. So the fact that people just kind of read into it what they wanted to see, it was disappointing. The fact that I think that a lot of people, especially right now, are like this because of the whole Aaron Hernandez thing. He wasn't considered a suspect, and then lo and behold, it goes from pretty much that to he's a serial killer almost overnight. So I think some people tend to draw a parallel to things that they shouldn't. I'd say this
no
is one
intended,
of them. It sounds
like.
Let me give you another parallel that's going to happen. With the Deion Jordan situation, you see a lot of people saying, well, take this guy off the board, take that guy off the board because of off-the-field issues. We ran into the exact same thing in the 2010 draft. Well, we don't want problem guys. We don't want Dez Bryant because he's an issue. Stuff like that. So now what you see people say on Twitter and things, well, I remember Jared Audrick and Coamisi as the guys we traded down to get instead of getting Dez Bryant. And, you know, take a guy like Green Beckham or Collins or some of these guys that have some issues. If they turn out to be stars, and we don't know that yet, but if they turn out to be stars and they were off the board because of issues, you can bet you'll see fans all over the site, Dolphins fans everywhere will be saying, we shouldn't have traded down, or we should have taken this guy, he was there, why didn't we, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's the same kind of stuff. So here's what you need to do. If you think these players are going to be an issue off the field, you know, that's what this pre-draft evaluation is for. Look at these guys, evaluate them, get to know them really well, get to know their backgrounds. If you think this guy is kind of a product of a bad environment, so to speak, that if you kind of shelter him, he's going to be a good player, then you take him and you do that. You don't, you know, don't take a guy, and I hate to keep bringing up the situation, but don't take a guy like Jonathan Martin and then throw him in a locker room with guys who, you know, are going to escalate a situation like that. If you just want to take choir boys, that's fine. That's their prerogative. They said, I believe their words were, they want players that love football. So part of that is, well, are you going to be this party animal? Or are you going to go out and get busted for drugs all the time or whatever else? You know, I guarantee that there's not just a handful of players in the NFL that smoke pot or any of that other stuff. I'm sure it's a lot more rampant than we think. What makes Deion Jordan so bad is he couldn't get on the field. We traded up for him, and then he blows this test, even when he knows he's going to have to take this test. And you can just kind of tell the love of football is not really, you know, it's not really high on his list. But with these other guys, again, if you think that you can handle the off-the-field stuff, if you think you can shelter these kids from bad environments, if you think, like we joked about on the show, we can let them live at Stephen Ross's house, just, you know, whatever. If you think you can put these guys in an environment, in a locker room with people that are going to say, listen, you need to keep yourself straight so that you can get on the field and do good things, then you take them. You know, character issues be darned. So, you know, it's just kind of a cyclical thing. 2010, you know, we don't want these trouble players. After, you know, when Brandon Marshall's here, well, let's get rid of him because he's a troubled guy. Then, you know, 2012, we get rid of him. We don't have a good receiving corps. We should have kept Marshall. It's the same thing. So just, you know, find the talent, develop the talent, and make sure you put them in a situation to win, both on the field and off the field.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I think you're right about the whole situation with at least Colin. All the teams that brought him in at this point, they're going to know what kind of person he is. And if we're getting the right story that he's just showing back to help, you know, take the paternity test, the things that, you know, a good person would do, then these teams know that. If there's something where he has a character concern involved in this, then they would have found that out in the pre-draft process. I'm not concerned about it at all.
I'm not either. I think that it's a lot of just knee-jerk reaction, but just really not taking the time to read into what's actually going on, which is dangerous unto itself. I think that we were just talking about pass rushers who are going to slide. You have to figure that, given the whole Deion Jordan thing, Randy Gregory is someone that might give people pause right now if they paid any attention to the Deion Jordan thing. So that's just my whole thought on it. I see a lot of Deion Jordan and Randy Gregory, although, he looks like an outstanding player. I've actually got some theories about...
Let me throw something else on real quick. You have to watch out for the media as well. You have to watch out for the media as well because they spin their own stories. And I'll give you an example. A guy that we've talked about on the show has repeatedly vouched for Jameis Winston, saying he's a guy that, you know, he would take. He loves him. He thinks he's got all the stuff to be a good quarterback. There's plenty of stuff out there saying this guy's got tons of character issues as well. The same guy has also said he wouldn't take Doyle Green Beckham or some of these other players like Marcus Peters because he doesn't want somebody to have to baby. So, you know, it's kind of pick and choose your own adventure there with some of this with some of the information you get out there regarding these players, because media members, not just Miami's, but everyone, has their own agenda. And, you know, we kind of look at it as a derogatory term to call them tools, but that's really kind of what they are at this point. I'm guaranteed the teams are using them to put out false information, using them as tools, so to speak, to put this stuff out there to maybe get a guy fall that they, you know, maybe a team like that needs a pass rusher, say in the mid-teens, that wasn't going to get one of these guys. We'll throw out some negative information out there. Use the media to make this guy kind of look bad. You know, it's very possible that stuff happens. But when you read anything about these players, just remember that whoever's writing this stuff has probably got their own bias, and you just kind of have to take it for what it is. Like I said, media members have said they don't want certain players because they want to they don't want to babysit someone, yet at the same time take a player with character issues because of something else. So, you know, it is what it is.
Let's look at this from a different angle, though. Actually, a completely different side of it, because you said the media and really the NFL media at large spinning certain topics and certain issues that have come out of the whole pre-draft process. A great example of that would be when Dallas came out it's now known that Dallas is the one who did it, but put out that Shane Ray needed toe surgery for turf toe. This is before the whole marijuana thing on Monday. This is late last week. It comes out that Shane Ray, according to one team's doctor, has a turf toe that needs to be surgically repaired. And all of a sudden it's getting spun out there, and people are like, oh, well, this guy's an injury case. I saw a bunch of people saying, like, well, then, he's probably not going to go that high in the draft if he's got the turf toe issue, and it's not really something that teams are going to want to work with right off the bat. And it comes out that it was just Dallas, pretty much. I mean, lowering his stock to the point where, I mean, you could slide right to him, if you're reading between the lines. So, I mean, I agree that this time of year, especially with all the stuff that comes out there on Twitter, even NFL.com, anywhere, the information, you have to take it with a grain of salt because a lot of it's agenda-driven. A lot of it is funneled to be a team. And, I mean, that team isn't out there to serve other teams' interests. They're out there to serve their own. And sometimes serving their own interests includes pumping up or deflating a player's stock, which sounds really messed up. But, I mean, we've seen it happen time and time again. But Dan Marino is the greatest example of that. Mr. Supposed Cokehead himself at the University of Pitt, to the point where the Raiders didn't even have him in their top three, which seems incredibly messed up when you think about it. At number 26 overall, the Raiders weren't interested in Dan Marino. And a big reason for that is that whole rumor that was out there about drug use at the University of Pittsburgh, and it turned out to be, as far as we could tell, complete BS. And even if some of it was true, it never was a factor in his pro career. So, I mean, sometimes like, things just get spun, and what you choose to do with that information can determine whether or not you get a prospect you can be patient with, the kind of guy that you wanted all along, or maybe you find yourself getting talked out of some of these players, which isn't always a good thing.
And you have to trust these teams you have to trust the team, you know, that Tannenbaum and Hickey and all their guys have done the necessary amount of research on these players. So, all right, just for example, look at Doyle Green Beckham. Nobody expects him to be on the Dolphins board because of the Deion Jordan situation. If the Dolphins turn his name in at 14 and they call his name, you're going to have a ton of fans that are like, I can't believe they're going to take a chance on this guy because of this and that and the other. And that's a very valid point, but you have to trust that these guys have done that research. Now, you know, you look back at, you know, the predecessor that was there with Jeff Ireland, and you know, he made plenty of mistakes, and that was kind of the icing on the cake there. But I think these guys are a little better. There was a story out this week about how Tannenbaum hired a team employee to be the driver for some of these prospects, and he would pick them up and just engage them in conversation. And he used that as part of his evaluation to see which one of them had charisma, which one of them, you know, was easier to talk to and things like that. And it ended up being Revis, and that's who he chose. So, I mean, when I read that, it kind of made me think, you know, these guys are a lot more slick and clever than we really think they are. And who knows what they've done to get evaluations on these players. So whoever they pick, if it's Gurley with the injury issues, if it's Collins or Green Beckham with character issues, whatever it is, I'm going to trust these guys have done enough homework and they believe that those aren't going to be issues.
That's really what it all boils down to, doesn't it? Having faith. And I think the problem is that the majority of Dolphins fans have been burned so many times that the faith, no matter how much we want it, just isn't there.
Well, you're going to have to do it at some point. And I think that if you're going to trust the process, this is a good front office to do. I mean, have these guys given us any reason to doubt them thus far? I don't think so.
Well, if you listen to certain people, and I'm not talking about any beat writers, if you listen to certain people, then they're going to say, yeah, they didn't give us any reason to believe in them either.
Well, I don't know. All they did was land the biggest defensive fish. You got Ndamukong Suh going into his second contract, technically.
They would argue that he hasn't played yet. They would argue he hasn't played for us yet.
Well, there's a big difference between getting a guy at the end of his career, which has happened around here many times. I think that they might be confusing that situation with a guy literally second contract. The only other example you can find of that in the past 25 years is Reggie White. I'm fairly certain that worked out well for the Green Bay Packers. So, yeah, but, I mean
you've got
a great point you bring up. Well, no. A great point you bring up is the fact that some people say that. I'm not interested in what those people say. I'm interested in what the people, I mean, I'm interested in what you guys say because I'm around you enough. I mean, we chat about this often on Twitter and other forms of media. I know where you guys are at. I think that you're all really knowledgeable football minds. So, yeah, if you came up and said something to that effect, I'd say, well, maybe I need to go ahead and take a step back and look at this. Maybe there's something to this. But notice that none of us, and it's not like we're lemmings here, but none of us have an issue with Hickabomb thus far. What I've seen from these guys, I know some people had an issue with the Juwan James pick. I defy people to tell me that was the wrong pick, especially given what took place last season with the offensive line. I don't know if that pick could have been more clutch. And at the time, it looked like a reach and a dud, safe pick, a cop-out, whatever you want to say. Something they shouldn't have done at number 19 overall. I mean, I heard it all about Juwan James, but all I know is at the end of the day, Juwan James is this team's right tackle. It looks like he's going to be there for a long time, which is pretty exciting because that position was an absolute just disaster for us, really since the end of Vernon Carey's career and so on and so forth. So,
well, we still have another disaster zone to deal with, and if we're going wide receiver in the first, we better be going guard in the second because if we're not, we're in trouble. Dallas Thomas, enough said.
Well, I think that's where the Lyle Collins thing comes in, too. And the thing that maybe that news benefits someone because they get Lyle Collins at a spot that they wouldn't, like suppose Carolina. I think Carolina would be pretty stoked about getting Lyle Collins.
Oh, I'm sure.
So
they have Jonathan Martin and they have Jonathan Martin and Michael O'Hur as their tackles right now. I'm pretty sure they would be happy to have Lyle Collins.
I agree. I couldn't agree with you more. I think that Lyle Collins, regardless of what people think, Lyle Collins is a player the Dolphins need to consider at number 14, and I think they will. And as Duke put it perfectly, that yeah, you got stuff coming out right now, but you as a fan, you needn't worry about that right now. Trust the process, let the front office take care of it. And these guys haven't given us any reason thus far to doubt them and think that they're going to boot this. Jarvis Landry is a great example, too. Of all the people were complaining when Dennis Hickey was trading down last year in the second round, who were thinking, what are you doing? We need playmakers here. Now, Jarvis Landry isn't the ultimate playmaker. All I know is that he's pretty much just a near do-everything type receiver who's willing to do the dirty work. Those guys aren't easy to find. And he's reliable. He's clutch. That guy wants the ball, which for the longest time here was a big problem. It seemed like none of these guys wanted the ball. I think about Ted Ginn in that New Orleans game in 2009, and I feel, to this day, I feel like Ted Ginn really got the short end of the stick from fans during and after that game because there was a lot of spots he was put in where he was looked at as a number one wide receiver during that game. He's not a number one wideout. He didn't want the ball. He didn't look like he wanted the ball. I mean, he was all wide-eyed. He looked terrified during some of those throws. Jarvis Landry is the kind of guy who wants to do the dirty work underneath, and he wants that ball. And I think Kenny Still is the kind of guy who does great work in space, and he wants the ball. So, and Greg Jennings has demonstrated time and time again that he wants the ball. When a game's on the line, he wants the ball. So I think it's a sort of a
didn't
little
Wallace do the
overall.
Same thing?
That's why
Wallace wanted the ball. Yeah, he made it very clear he wanted the ball.
I'm talking about late in games. I'm talking about making the tough catches, making it when it counts, too. I understand that people say, well, he made a great one-handed grab out of bounds. I don't see it.
That's a different
I want
context,
the guys
yes.
who are – Well, no, that's actually that's how I started this discussion, talking about that Ted Ginn didn't want the ball, even though Ted Ginn had breakaway speed, outstanding deep threat, that and a kick returner, that's pretty much it. So this is something, so you're looking for a little bit of a culture change in the receiver court, and I think that you're finding it in the front office, so I trust these guys. I'm excited to see what they do. I don't think they're going to let us down. I mean, I'm not saying that every pick they make is going to be outstanding. I think that you look at the best regimes, and even they screw it up once in a while. So there needs to be a little bit of – there needs to be a grounded approach to expectations when it comes to the Miami Dolphins front office right now. Because considering a lot of things that they took over, a lot of things look better. They were fortunate to get a franchise quarterback. And there, yes, I'm calling him a franchise. It's no longer franchise caliber. I think that Ryan Tannehill is a franchise quarterback.
I mean, in my opinion, you look at what the front office has done just this season. You look at, you know, someone posted on Twitter kind of how bad the 2013 offseason really was in terms of free agency, the draft. And, I mean, you kind of look at the look at what they've done. They've gotten rid of all those contracts. They traded players that no one thought could be traded because of those contracts. They've added good young talent. They brought in Ndamukong Suh, who's not just your ordinary free agent. This wasn't, you know, and I think Brandon Albert's a great addition. But this guy, you know, that as good as that was, this is even better. And you know, it's kind of like they came in and, I don't know, you just kind of got the sense they know what they're doing. You know, it's kind of like when they got started, you just expected them to kind of stand out at the door and look at the crowd and go, I got this. I don't know, just me.
No, I understand. That's a great point, too. I couldn't agree more, actually. I mean, I think it's an exciting time. A lot of people, I've seen a lot of people on Twitter treat it like we're just sort of trying, the Dolphins are trying to tread through mine-infested shallow water right now, and I don't think that's the case. You guys, they have an excellent quarterback in place who's still developing, who could be incredible when all is said and done. There's a lot of great things in place for this team right now. I mean, this is, and think about the spots we've been in the past couple of years, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. Went into to one season where we were depending on Gus Frerotte. Like, are you kidding me? I mean, as good a time as ever in the past 15 years to be a Dolphins fan.
I think with the picks that people see and they either go, you know, oh, okay, I'm fine with this, or like, who is this guy? I think the nice thing about those picks is that Miami's going, and when they do that, they're getting the guy that they want. They're all in on the guy that they want instead of just kind of like, shooting in the dark on, okay, this guy's supposedly good. You know, everyone knows he's good. Like, I'd rather fail and go big on what I believe in than, you know, kind of take the easy road out and maybe be right.
I think you're absolutely right. I think that you could probably put Deion Jordan in that category. I think that Jeff Ireland was looking to get some people off of his back. I was trying to impress him, so he thinks he's going to get this pass rusher who looks like the Terminator. And, you know, through a series of faults, his and, in my opinion, I still hold the coaching staff accountable for some of the stuff that went down with Deion Jordan. But ultimately, if you can't fix the player, no amount of coaching is going to change that. So if he's not interested in doing his job with this team, then it is what it is. I know that's the pick that everyone is mourning right now. Everyone's sore about what happened to DeAndre Jordan. I am too. You know, Duke was a huge fan of drafting Desmond Trufant with that number 12 selection that year. And that would have been a great pick for Miami. I think Desmond Trufant would do great work for the Dolphins. But one thing that I would probably help serve this fan base is the fact that hindsight is a borderline pointless tool. It does absolutely nothing but irritate you. And the thing is, a lot of all the people who made those picks that really just dragged this team through mediocrity, a lot of those guys aren't here now. The jury's still out on Joe Philbin. We'll see. And Kevin Coyle. But I like where the front office is at. I like Bill Lazor. What's that? Are you okay?
No, I didn't say anything.
Oh, it sounded like you had a comment, or you had a sort of dubious sound to whatever noise you just made.
Did I make a noise?
It sounded like a groan.
No, I'm good. Continue your thoughts.
Moving on. No, that's pretty much it. So,
I know a lot of people were down on Joe Philbin, and the coaches, but, you know, and I'm kind of down on them a little bit too, but let's just be honest. Miami was two defensive plays away from being a 10-6 team. I mean, there was a couple of defensive plays, a couple of offensive plays in there where some players dropped the ball or something like that. They were a couple of plays away from being a 10-6 team. If those plays happen, and it's not the coach's fault that those plays didn't get made. Players were in a position, just couldn't get it done. So if the players make those plays, Miami's 10-6 and in the playoffs, nobody cares. You know, it's not a discussion. So, you know, yeah, they need the coaches need to improve in some areas and get better, but, you know, it's not their fault all the time that plays didn't get made.
I agree. I think we're winding the show down a little bit. I know I'm tired, and I need to get a couple of additional articles up this evening. So if there's anything else that you guys want to talk about before we go ahead and call it a night, now would be the time to do so.
We didn't do our mock draft. I was all excited and stuff.
Oh, that's right. Let's do the mock draft then. Okay, let's figure this out. I knew we were missing something. Okay, there's five of us on here.
Is James here? Is it six?
No, it's just five. I'm the one who works the phones now. So I'm the captain now. So I'm looking at it. We can do let's go ahead and we'll do five. So we'll start like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then we'll just repeat. How's that sound? Sounds a little bit unorthodox, but why not? It's anarchy. The NFL draft is anarchy anyway.
Let's do it.
So, okay. Let's go ahead and I'll start just because. And I'm gonna do the obvious. I'm not going to get cute with it, although I am one of the few who would take Marcus Mariota over Jameis Winston, just so we're clear. But I'm going to do what I think Tampa will do, which is I'm going to take Jameis Winston at number one overall. Just so you know, I am documenting this right now. I'm writing it down. So who wants to – well, Duke, how about your number two? We'll do it in list of who's on the caller line.
I'm going to go with Mariota. I don't think – I mean, the Titans want to trade out, and I'm not going to – you know, try to predict any kind of trades or nothing. So if they're stuck with the pick, I think they would go Mariota just because.
What do you think will happen at that spot, though? Do you think Tennessee fails to find a suitor and they just take him himself?
I do, and if there was one piece of information out there that I would kind of believe in, I would believe that Cleveland would make the trade up. Get Mariota. They've got the two first round picks they can offer. They do have a little bit better receiving core now with Bow and Hartline and what they had. You know, it's not an ideal situation necessarily for Mariota, but you know, I could see them making that move. I don't buy any of the Phillip Rivers stuff. I don't buy any of the Eagles stuff trading up. There's just a lot of moving parts to both of those that don't make a lot of sense. So, in my opinion, it's Cleveland moving up to number two or Tennessee staying at number two. And there are a number of players that they could pick there at number two. Like I said, some of those pass rushers, but I think they would go. If they were on the clock and couldn't make the trade, I think they would go with Mariota.
All right. He has spoken. I believe that means Lewis is next. You're number three. You're Jacksonville.
Okay. Jacksonville, I think we're gonna go ahead and go with Leonard Williams.
I was gonna say that this is like the first, in my opinion, difficult pick because you have to figure that regardless of who's making that pick at number two, it's Marcus Mariota. But
I wouldn't think that.
I actually
mocked Leonard Williams to the Titans on the Thin Maniacs mock draft. I didn't think they I wasn't ready to give up on Mettenberger so quickly.
That's a good point. I think I'm not a big fan of Mettenberger, so I think I'm just being selfish. I think that if you're there, you take Marcus Mariota. I think that's also sort of an esoteric response to watching Miami so many times pass on quarterbacks because they liked what they had. And I think sometimes if you get a guy who you think is really going to be that good, then, I mean, just pony up, you know, man up and take him.
Okay,
Brian, you're next.
Just for the sake of argument real quick, do you believe that Mariota is going to be anything special?
I think he's going to be pretty good, yeah.
Okay.
I think the one thing that you can say against him is I don't think he's going to be ready right away, which is why I think Jameis Winston goes first. I think Jameis Winston will be ready – will be ready to contribute much sooner than Marcus Mariota. I think Marcus Mariota in the right, it's the same thing with Ryan Tannehill. If he gets into the right system and he's got the right offensive coordinator, he's got a guy who's actually knows how to develop him, then yeah, I think he's going to be pretty good. Ryan Tannehill, I mean, let's be honest, Ryan Tannehill could have been a borderline disaster in the wrong system.
No, I won't deny it.
Yeah. I mean, it's something where it's nice that Mike Sherman, I wasn't a big fan of what Mike Sherman did with Ryan Tannehill, but you saw the huge leap that he made, and a lot of people would say, well, yeah, that's because he's in year three with Lazor, but I just think that Lazor's the kind of guy that the NFL really makes its money on right now. These guys who are these proto-offensive minds. So, and the one that it seemed like we were looking at – we hired a guy because we thought that Cam Cameron was going to be that sort of offensive mind at one point. Anyway, Brian, you are the Oakland Raiders, which means that you have that that Dutch boy haircut.
I'm still a loser. I like the Leonard Williams pick at three. I think he'll be a good player. I agree with everything you said on Mariota. However, I am just going to put – before I make my pick, I'm going to put my prediction that I really say what you want. I really see no reason why Marcus Mariota won't be starting for the Philadelphia Eagles next year. I just think Chip Kelly is doing his thing. He has been quiet recently.
He's obsessed with his duck.
Letting their Browns have their moment. And draft day, they have made all the choices to build a team around Chip Kelly, and Chip Kelly will get his guy. That's just my prediction. So when it happens, you can let me know. My pick for the Oakland Raiders would be Kevin White. I think Oakland looks at Amari Cooper, but they are usually one of the teams that are impressed with physicality, combine, and mostly speed. Kevin White's got all three of those things very well. I think he isn't the most pro-ready as Amari Cooper, but he is a higher ceiling, and he can help a team who's pretty anemic on offense score touchdowns. I think that's what Kevin White can do, and that's why I'm a big proponent of trying to see if there's any way, if he drops, if there's any chance in hell he could end up on the Miami Dolphins. But I think Kevin White, I've always said Kevin White will be the first receiver taken. I stand by that. And the fourth pick, the Oakland Raiders select Kevin White.
I like it. I like the rationalization that Lewis put out there with Leonard Williams. I agree. Kevin White, I agree too. I like the sort of coincidence with this next pick. Zach, you're still here, right?
Yeah, I'm on, guys.
All right. Your roommate's a Washington Redskins fan, right?
Yeah, he is.
All right, well, get to make
this
team pick for him. No, you can't. There's a lot. There's actually more pressure on you than anyone else here. So what do you think?
Washington at five. I think Washington's tough. I think Washington really looks to trade down here. They need to make amends for the RG3 ransacking, I guess we'll call it. But if they're staying at this pick, it's rough. I think I have to go with best player in my mind available here and take Dante Fowler, just because they have Trent Murphy, and I think Trent Murphy can be good, but I think Dante Fowler can be a whole different level, especially pairing him with Kerrigan, who Kerrigan has really nice technique, and I've always been a big Kerrigan fan. So putting them together and him learning, I think he'll – be a perfect rotation guy maybe right off the bat. If not, an every down player for them.
Great. Oh, boy. Okay. I have to make
you're
a Jets pick. Yeah, that's tough.
No sabotaging. Be honest.
Take a punt.
No. Yeah. Say again?
I said take a punt.
I'd like to. That's intriguing, and it's also tempting. I think that,
take Ken O'Brien.
Yeah. UC Davis. I think that, we'll see. Todd Bowles needs a pass rusher.
I think you can safely eliminate the idea of a cornerback at this point.
Yeah, right, because they cornered the market. I don't, again, another pun. Sorry about that. I'm going to give him Todd Gurley.
Mm.
Fair enough.
You gave him Gurley.
Why?
Well, I'm not even trying to sabotage it. I think that, if they're as committed to Geno Smith as they claim, then you think about that pick goes, in my opinion, one of three ways. It's either Brandon Scherff, and you try to go ahead and reinforce the offensive line. The receiver, which it could be, that's the other one I thought about. Or you go ahead and if you buy into the whole Adrian Peterson comparison with Todd Gurley, that can also be your quarterback's best friend. I think that I already have that answered. I think that it's just the kind of splash pick that I can see the Jets going with to kick off this whole new regime. Although I also considered Amari Cooper, but I can see Todd Gurley going into the spot. So this feels like a Jets thing. This is a team that took tight end after tight end, so don't question me.
You went offense. I think that was about as good as you can get. Geno needs all the help he can get. Unless he's playing in Miami, that's like the one. That's like the one exception. Every time Geno plays in Miami, he suddenly becomes a superstar.
Right.
Yeah, I know. He and Thad Lewis. I don't get it with those guys. All right, Duke, you are the Chicago Bears. You are Ryan Pace in the Chicago Bears.
Who are the? So it's Winston, Mariota, Leonard Williams, Kevin White. Who was the fifth pick?
Dante Fowler.
Okay, so with the seventh pick, Chicago Bears take Vic Beasley. Oh.
And I wouldn't say that's our first surprise, because I think Gurley would be a bit of a surprise, but that's an interesting pick for a Bears.
They're building the defense. They've got some edge rushers. They added Pernell McPhee, but when you can add a guy that can come off the edge like that with his athleticism, I think they take a guy like him. So with him sitting on the board at seven, I mean, there's a couple of ways that can go, but I think that's a not just a safe pick, but a good pick for them. And I don't know that they would take a cornerback at that spot, and they could probably use a little help in the secondary, but in the division with Bridgewater and Rodgers and Stafford throwing the ball all over the place, you need a guy that can get after the quarterback. So, can't hurt to add another pass rusher.
I agree. That's a good pick.
I can go with that. Okay, who is it?
You have the Atlanta Falcons at number eight.
I'm up. Yeah, I'm up.
You took all the pass rushers.
I thought I was up, no? Or am I off?
No, it's Lewis and then Brian.
Oh, okay.
Stop trying to cut in line.
My bad, you're up.
He can cut if he wants. I'll switch with him. Jeez.
Yeah, but I don't want that pick anyway.
I was going to say, this is a tough one.
Like, you stole all the pass rushers. It would have been easy.
I know. That's
pretty much all they wanted.
You got to find your Leo pass rusher. Could also upgrade the offensive line, too, just saying.
Okay, well, they need help on defense, and maybe they need to give a little more help to Matt Ryan. They have enough, like, offensive weapons to last a lifetime. Julio Jones, Roddy White. I'm not sure if they're still looking for a Tony Gonzalez replacement. I'm not watching the Falcons that carefully. They still have their quarterback, Matt Ryan. They don't need a wide receiver, that's for sure. You know what? I'm just going to go with Brandon Scherff just because they need to give Matt Ryan some more protection. It's not a good idea. It's, as we Dolphins fans know quite well by now, if your quarterback is on his back, he can't do much for you.
I agree. And it's a good pick.
If there had been a good pass, if Beasley had still been there or somebody like that, I would have picked them without even hesitating.
No one faults you for the pick. I certainly don't. Brian, you're up with the New York Football Giants.
New York Giants. That was a good pick for Atlanta. I think Atlanta will try to trade up and get one of the top guys for a pass rusher. Like you said, is their main goal. They couldn't get to the rusher, or the passer, I'm sorry. Or Atlanta might be one of those teams that Gurley goes to. I don't think Gurley's going to make it out of the top 10, and I think for some reason he might just stay at home in Georgia. But to my pick, the Giants, in a tough spot, but they definitely need offensive line help. So I would have gone with Scherff. I'm a little bit pissed that he's gone. If I'm a Giants fan, I'd probably get the best tackle with his. Probably, I'll take probably Pete, the tackle from Stanford. I think he can jump in. He's a big power guy, so I think he'll kind of anchor down whatever side they need him to in New York. So that was my pick.
You have to figure that he's going to go a lot higher than people assume tomorrow night. Something about that guy's stock just makes me feel like some team within, I don't know. I don't know if I'm comfortable giving a range. Top 16, top 17. Because I've seen him mocked in the 20s. We have to think that some team is going to buy him as a franchise left tackle. Yeah, Anders Pete.
Yeah. It was between him and Flowers, but I don't know. I went with Pete.
Yeah, I prefer Flowers, actually. So, Zach, you are the St. Louis Rams at number 10.
All right, so the Rams also need offensive line help. And speaking of Eric Flowers, I'm going to take Eric Flowers here because I love Eric Flowers. He is just a big, nasty Miami man, and he reminds me absolutely of Vernon Carey. And they can plug him in on the right side, opposite of Robinson. They can plug him in at guard, wherever they want. He's got to work on some pass protection. I think that's due to his size. He'll come in and he will annihilate smaller defensive linemen. And if he gets to the second level, linebackers and safeties will be terrified.
Can't disagree. We've had a lot of conversations regarding Flowers, so. I don't disagree with any of that. I think that he's going to – I'm certainly higher on him as a pro than I think most in the Twitter scouting community are. Minnesota at number 11. I think this is where Amari Cooper goes. I'd love to be selfish and keep him on the board for later, but I think Minnesota – looking at their best receivers last year, they need a real weapon. They need a guy who's going to be a sort of do everything type receiver for Teddy Bridgewater. I think that Amari Cooper can be that guy for him.
I don't know. I was thinking maybe they were looking to get somebody else on the defense. At least that's what everybody else has been mocking, whether it's Waynes or Peters or Johnson, but somebody in that kind of at that position.
Yeah, you can see that too. I can't change it now. But, yeah, there are guys in there. I know for a while a lot of people thought that it could be Eric Kendricks because their linebacker core is sort of a work in progress. I saw somebody talking about the outside possibility that they go after a guy like Bud Dupree, which would be interesting. Just an absolute house just to give them some pass rushing depth because they have Anthony Barr and they have Everson Griffin. But it'd be nice to, because, I mean, they have a nice defensive line going right now. And, I mean, a guy like Dupree could just absolutely put it in overdrive. But a loss in this one, they get Amari Cooper, which hurts all of us, I think, most of us at least. Duke, you
are.
That
was surprising Cooper's lasted so long.
I know. Well, I mean, he could be the guy going to the Jets. I mean, he was the other guy I wavered on at number six, so. Duke, you get to play the role of Ray Farmer. So what I need you to do is put your cell phone away, no texting, and go ahead and make this pick.
I mean, there are a ton of picks that make sense, but this is Cleveland. So,
you're gonna trade two of your draft picks anyway. So who cares?
Yeah, I guarantee they will draft in here tomorrow.
I'm going to go with a guy that I don't know who they have at this position, but I'm going to give them Landon Collins. I don't think that they have. I don't think they've really ever replaced T.J. Ward. They've got Tayshaun Gibson as the free safety. At least they gave him a restricted free agent tender, so I don't know what all's going on there, but I don't know who their safeties are. I don't think they have anybody back there that is as talented as Landon Collins is, and he can be that in-the-box safety for them. So not necessarily a surprise pick or a weird pick because it's help they can use, but I just couldn't really think of anybody else that really made sense. I mean, I could see Devontae Parker maybe. I just think they're going to wait on receiver. Danny Shelton maybe, but I don't know. Collins seems to be the best pick of all the picks that didn't make sense to me. So.
All right, Lewis. New Orleans Saints, number 13 overall.
New Orleans is actually where I would have brought in Landon Collins. I guess they're reeling right now because they've traded away most of their offensive weapons. I mean, now that Stills is gone and they traded Jimmy Graham of all people, Drew Brees is just looking around wondering where the heck did all my weapons go. So as much as it pains me to do this, at this point I'm thinking that the Saints need to restock their offensive weapon artillery, and they're going to draft Devontae Parker to start doing that.
Wow.
I don't disagree with the logic, by the way. I think that they've put themselves in a position where this is the rational decision for them at number 13 overall, because while they do need to do work in the front seven, that receiver cupboard is awfully bare right now. So we're going to let Brian make this pick at 14 for Miami, but we'll add a little.
Don't make me mad, Brian.
Mention that once Brian makes his pick, I'll let everyone else make their pick for Miami as well to see how it gels with the rest of this draft. So, sorry, Brian, go ahead.
No, that's fine. I was going to say before I start, I'm just trying to take a group vote and see who would be happy if this is how the draft played out and Miami could not find anyone to trade back right now. Who would be happy if we're sitting here and the board is how it is?
I would be fine because I think there are a number of picks that Miami could take at 14 that are still on the board that I would be cool with, even at 14. So I'm not – I mean, yeah, Devontae Parker's not there, but based on the picks that have gone, other than that, I'm fine.
All right, well, I'm sure everyone will sound off after me. Obviously, I think Devontae Parker definitely would have been the pick. I didn't see him going against New Orleans. I thought New Orleans was going to go secondary, possibly with a cornerback or so. I'm not sure on Trey Waynes as far as a good fit for the Dolphins. Danny Shelton is interesting and intriguing, but I don't think he's the pick. I'm higher on Eric Kendricks than most people, but I don't know if this is the year where we go a linebacker with our first pick. So despite all the drama today, I just have a feeling that the way the draft is setting up and everything is going recently and the moves Miami's making, we're going to play it kind of conservative like we did last year. There might be some backlash, but I think Miami, before today, and I'm not going to mess around with it, but I think Miami will actually look at Collins here as a tackle. And he'll slide in as guard, and his experience at tackle, he might be the best tackle in the draft.
Didn't Collins get picked already?
No.
You're talking about Lyle Collins.
Yeah, Lyle Collins.
Okay. I thought he got picked. No, I thought he got picked already.
No, that was Landon Collins.
Yeah. It's not a sexy pick like last year, but last year ended up working out for us. I think guard is currently the team's biggest need, or biggest hole, I would say, maybe not need or value. And it definitely makes our offense better. I think Devontae Parker would have been the move. Miami's looking to trade down at this point at all costs, but if they have a good feeling about Collins not being in any actual trouble, I think he makes the most sense at this pick, even though there are a couple decent options. And if I was picky, I would look to trade down. But if I'm not, well, Collins is my pick at 14.
Zach, you're next. Who are you taking for the Dolphins at number 14?
At this point, I'll make the case for the Danny Shelton case because you know at this point that I love Danny Shelton. A lot of people see him as a 3-4 nose, you know, maybe a 4-3-0-1 shade. But I think he can play that 3-tech too. And I think he just brings the versatility. And the best part is he played so many snaps at Washington that putting him in that defensive tackle rotation that Miami really loves, I think he'll benefit from more. You know, you're not giving Earl Mitchell all of the snaps, which I'm not sure if he could handle right off the bat. He had a good year last year, but I'm not sure if he can handle that load. So having those guys, plus having Anthony Johnson backing them up in case someone goes down, God forbid, I think that'd be a really interesting pick. I don't know if it will be the pick, but I think it would definitely be an interesting case.
Very nice. Duke, you're next.
I mean, this literally 4 or 5 players that I would be happy with. I mean, if I had to go with who I think that the Dolphins would actually pick at this point, I was forced to take someone that hasn't already been mentioned, I would say Nelson Agholor. But if it were me, personally, I'm still a fan of Doriel Green Beckham. I think the talent will outweigh off the field issues. Granted, I don't have the inside information that the team does, but he's a guy that he's not going to come in immediately and be a superstar receiver. But in 3 years from now, I think all Dolphins fans would be happy with watching Tannehill chuck up some passes to him. Becoming an elite playmaker. So that would be who I would want to take. I've been a fan of his since first watched him in 2013. So, but who I actually think they'll take is Agholor.
Okay. Lewis, you're next.
Lyle Collins, no question. Next. Give Tannehill some protection for once in his career, please. 139 sacks in 3 years is unacceptable. He should have broken by now. It's a miracle he hasn't.
I agree. I was hoping that we were going to get five different people at this spot. I'm going to go off the beaten path a little bit. I'm going to take a guy I'm partial to in this draft. I'm going to take Kevin Johnson, cornerback out of Wake Forest.
I was scared to death you were going to pick Trey Waynes just to mess with me.
I'm not going to say the thought didn't cross my mind, pardon the double negative, but even when it comes to trolling you, I have my limits. And right here, just I'm a big fan of Kevin Johnson. Zach and I were talking about him earlier today. Duke as well. Duke and I have watched a lot of tape, and I came away pretty impressed. I liked him. Not a huge fan of his long speed.
He is everything that the Dolphins do in the secondary. You watch him play, and it was basically like, you know, I remember the tape we watched. It was basically like watching the Dolphins cornerbacks play. You know, he was 7 to 10 yards off the ball every time. He was pretty much a zone guy. Like Will Davis, he's allergic to tackling. But other than that, I thought he played the ball well, has good technique. So, yeah, I like that pick.
Thank you. I appreciate the compliment.
I don't want to throw a name out there that I know Zach and I have talked about, that a lot of people aren't even mentioning to the Dolphins. And if the Dolphins are going to completely pull a surprise move, it's going to be Jake Fisher. No one has mentioned him to the Dolphins. No one. But he was a super athletic guy, got left tackle potential. But he's a guy, in my opinion, that you could plug in at left guard right now. He needs to add some strength, so he might be lacking a little bit in the run game. But when you put him out there, if you get a guy that size on the move, getting to the second level, I think he's going to be a good player. And then, you know, he's an eventual successor to Brandon Albert. But, you know, a lot of times these teams will, you know, they will talk to players, they'll fill out all this information, and they'll draft a guy that no one was expecting, kind of like how Jacksonville did with Blake Bortles. So if there was a guy out there that, in my opinion, is on Miami's board, high on Miami's board, that is not being talked about, is Jake Fisher.
It's being talked about now. So you people heard it here first. All right, so actually we're coming up right on 10:30 Eastern, so this worked out perfectly. I'm glad you guys remembered the whole mock draft. I would have forgotten about it. Any last thoughts before we sign off for the night? Anything pressing on your mind? Anything you want to talk about in terms of the Trey Waynes?
I'm not going to go into it.
I was interested that nobody tried to mock Rashad Perriman to the Dolphins. Not that I would. But for some reason, that seems to be the square peg in a round hole that a lot of people are trying to force at number 14. And I understand that. I mean, there's tons of explosiveness with that guy. There's just big play ability for days with him. But I think the lack of route running polish hurt. I know some people claim that the drops with him are focus drops, and they're not indicative of having hands of stone or anything. So I was kind of interested to see if anyone here was going to take that leap of faith and say, oh, here you go, here's Rashad Perriman.
No, there's not a whole lot of people actually wanting to take Perriman like he's some big deal. Although if you're going to talk about potential, I think he's somewhere along the lines of he would probably be the less dangerous off-field issue of Doriel Green Beckham, because DGB has more, his better measurables, and he has greater potential to be a star, but Perriman is cleaner as far as off the field stuff is concerned. He just drops the ball more than Perriman, rather than Green Beckham. They both still have the same criticism of their route running. They're both not that great at it, and Perryman, the one thing that people say about him is that he's stiff and he doesn't run, and he doesn't play nearly as fast as his 40 time indicates. So there's a few people who are saying that they don't see that, but I'm going with the general consensus that Perryman is not as good as people are saying that he is.
My pick at wide receiver, personally, and I, like I said, I like Doyle Green Beckham, but if I had to give advice to Dolphins fans as to what type of receiver Miami needs, find out whichever receiver in this draft is the absolute best at running a wide receiver screen, and then draft that guy. It sickened me watching them throw the ball to Wallace or even Hartline last year on these wide receiver screens. Those guys are not guys that excel at those type of routes. They are straight line guys, different type of things, but they are not guys that are going to make you miss in space. Find a guy that can make you miss in space that if you had to try to tackle this guy in a phone booth, he would still get out, and that's the guy you want. Which is why I'm a big fan of Dorsett and Aguilar and guys like that, because they can do that.
I got to say, I love the people on the site. I don't know. I've seen this guy's name many, many times. I never know how to pronounce it. It looks like Neat 88. Mate, Neat. I was calling him Neat 88, but he went ahead and he cataloged this 14-pick mock draft for us. So thanks for doing that. That was really nice of you. Some people were following along that. I like seeing that, too. That's funny. I was love seeing the comments that people put out here. I mean, the point of this entire exercise we did with this mock draft just proves that, I mean, 14 can go so many ways, especially if those receivers are off the board. I think it becomes an open and shut case if you have a guy like Devontae Parker there, but, I mean, stuff gets real if New Orleans takes him at number 13, but, I mean, that's okay. I like the excitement.
It seems to me the way the Dolphins have set things up so that the only thing that is really a need at this point is the guard, because they've taken care of wide receiver and free agency. They've tried to handle cornerback with Zach Bauman and Bryce McCain. They've tried to handle linebacker with they brought back Kelvin Shepard for depth, and they still have Jordan Tripp. And word inside the organization is that the Dolphins are pretty much in love with Tripp, and they like his instincts, so he could possibly play middle linebacker moving forward. And he's definitely buffed up since the last season, so he could probably do that if the push comes to shove. So really the only thing that's left that's actually a need, per se, like an actual hole that needs to be filled or we're in serious trouble at this point, is guard. Valai Marfitt is still there in the second round. I can see them going there. So there's still room for – they've set things up so that they can take best player available if they wanted to it in the first round. That's why the whole idea of, well, who are you going to take in the 14, there is no clear choice, because now the way the Dolphins have set up the roster, they could pretty much take whoever they wanted.
And
I agree.
The issue I have with a guard at 14 is just based on positional value, because guards have lower positional values than – most other positions. However, I think there's going to be a live thread tomorrow, and if Collins or Fisher, whoever gets taken at 14 as an offensive lineman, really an interior offensive lineman, then there's going to be a lot of uproar. But in my opinion, if they take a guy at 14, he's going to be a guy that will eventually move out to left tackle, not stay at left guard. So,
well, Collins can do that.
Yeah, so those picks are future tackles, not fixtures at guard, which means they're going to have a need at guard eventually again, but eventually you're going to have a need at left tackle because Brandon Albert can't play forever. So, you know, at this point in this particular draft, if you think you can find a tackle at 14 that can move inside the guard for a little bit and then move outside, I think that's a good pick. If you're just looking for a strict guard at 14, like a David DeCastro type, I wouldn't go that route.
Oh, David DeCastro. Well, I enjoyed this conversation we had tonight. I thought we brought up some really good points. I always love hearing your guys' side when it comes to the whole football analysis. We have some really smart football people who contribute to the website. And even though Zach doesn't come around much because someone banned him We talk to him on Twitter all the time, and it's great. I'd like to thank everyone for checking in tonight. We had a 5-person panel the whole night, and it was outstanding. So hope for the best tomorrow. It's going to be interesting regardless. Disappointing for some, I'm sure. Thrilling for others. So kind of look through and see if there's anything else that I want to cover before we go ahead and close it down, and I don't think so. So
I have one question.
Oh, you say this now as I do my send-off. What?
Is anybody going to the draft party tomorrow? At the stadium.
And where's the draft? Well,
I think CT on the site said that he was going to be there on a post. So you can look for him. He's put pictures up on the site before. I think he was at the Texans game in 2012. So you can look for him. He's the only one that I know of on the site that said he was actually going to be there.
And when you do see him, tell him that you want to draft Lyle Collins. I'm sure he'll agree with you. So I'm going to the draft on Friday, but I'm going because it's my buddy's bachelor party. And that was what his brother did for him, is we're all going down to because obviously the draft is in my neck of the woods this year. So I'll be there on Friday. I don't know how long I'm going to be in there, but I do look forward to it. So
you know that means you have to get on TV.
Oh, yeah. One of those people. My favorite Dolphins fan to ever get on TV during a draft telecast was, sorry to say, it was when they traded up for Deion Jordan, and you had that one guy who was almost doing the slow clap. Do you remember him? He was sitting there, and he was, like, kind of slow clapping and just, like, trolling the camera and trolling all the Jets fans in there. I love that guy. I wish I could find him so he could call into the show. Too bad it was for the Deion Jordan pick. But anyway, yeah, plenty of draft parties going on. Willis, you're going to be at Sun Life, right?
I'm going to be covering the event that's going on there, so.
Ooh. I almost called it Landshark. How terrible is that?
It's really terrible.
Landshark Stadium.
Landshark. I actually like Landshark beer. Does that make me a complete corporate whore or what?
Nah, it's not too bad.
I don't mind that. It's not in my top two, but I do enjoy it. So, all right, guys. For Duke, Lewis, Brian, Zach, I'm Keith, and we were able to spend exactly 39 minutes with you guys tonight. Thanks to everyone who called in. Enjoy the draft tomorrow night and the rest of the draft that goes on through the weekend. Cross your fingers, hope for the best, and we'll be back here on Thursday next week to go ahead and talk about everything that went down. So for everyone at the Finsider, have a great night, a great draft weekend, and we'll talk to you later.
Peace.
Good night.
Thanks, guys.